From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio, thanking you for joining us. And today we've got an interesting program. Coming up on Saturday is the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival, and we're going to hear specifically about that from some of the festival organizers later in the show. But a big part of that festival will be a lot of artisans from the La Crosse area who will be set up and offering various things at the festival, which is in downtown La Crosse. And that group is a group that appears together several times throughout the year, and they call it the Driftless Makers Exchange. And we've got a few makers themselves here with us today. First of all, Barb Koyman is a very, in her own words, eclectic maker of various things, but also a historian, a professor at UW-La Crosse, and active in the Driftless Makers Exchange. Barb, thanks a lot for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you for having us.
We've got Opal Tulpo is a fiber artist and does all kinds of needlework and sewing and wonderful things, and is with us as well. Opal, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
And Philip Waletzko. Phil is a woodworker who makes spoons and all sorts of spoon-like things. And I've seen pictures of other things too, and so we'll talk to Phil about all the different things that that he makes as well. Phil, thanks for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thanks.
Let's talk about being a maker. People might have seen that terminology used more conspicuously than it has been in the past, in the last several years, and especially in the last couple of years, as people have adopted hobbies that they didn't seem like they had time for before during various aspects of COVID life and that sort of thing. Barb, talk about being a maker. When you hear somebody talk about a maker, what does that mean to you?
I think it's a broader term than just like arts and crafts. And in fact, I think that's part of the reason why we were asked to be part of the La Crosse Winter Roots Fest, is that's about focusing on a variety of types of makers in this La Crosse region, whether they're doing craft beer, they're, you know, special foods that are farm to table, you know, the distillery, and then, of course, local bands. They are, in a way, themselves makers. They are creating music. So our part in this as arts and crafts makers, artisans, plays very well into that kind of bigger picture of what we're trying to focus on here in the Coulee region. So our group, Driftless Makers Exchange, we tend to bring in people who are, again, making, for the most part, arts and crafts. Anyone who participates in any of our shows, they have to have created it themselves in some way. It can't be like something that they bought from somewhere else and they're reselling it. And so we have just such a wide variety of really interesting crafts people and artisans out there. And our organization, our group has given a forum for them, you know, from jewelers to people who make their own botanicals and skincare products, to painters, to woodworkers like Phil, to people who make clothing and apparel and accessories like purses or belts or, you know, that just a wide variety of different kinds of things.
Phil, when I use that term maker, what is that, what bells go off in your head if somebody isn't quite familiar with how to put that in context?
You know, more so than just making an end product, it's the makers are more part of a community, whether it's part of, you know, the group that actually just makes a specific item. I'm part of a group in Viroqua that meets once a month, and we do spoon carving together, and we talk about what we're doing, what we're making. And more so in that, then there are individuals who also come and will attend that are carvers as well, and they are making gnomes, or they're doing dollar horses, or they're carving other types of sculptures. And then we have other people who dabble in other things. We have one really good craftsman who makes his big thing right now is he is making oak boxes. And, you know, being that maker is being part of a community where you can sit down and share what you're doing with other people and not necessarily, you know, trying to sell it or advertise it, but just being a member of, you know, it's like an old school sewing bee. It's somewhere you sit around, you talk about what you're doing, what you're making, what you're planning, and what the new cool stuff is. So that's what I really see being a maker of, is being part of that.
Speaking of, you said sewing bee, Opal, you make, you sew things and make things with needles and do other kinds of things with textiles and fibers. Talk about the position that you have within a community of makers, and how much of what you do is influenced by either the people who taught you or the other people who continue to do that kind of work.
How I started out, like needle felting, I took a class at the UWL, continuing learning, and I fell in love with it. So I just kept going with it. And the beautiful thing about makers, one thing that, as Phil put it, what we all do is a lot of us gather and we make things, our own art, while we discuss things, you know, everyday life and everything like that. And it's such a great way to, you know, A, get to know people better, and also just learn about people. And it's relaxing, and it's something that I look forward to doing all the time.
These artistic ventures like this can often be very solitary activities, but you've all talked about being able to connect with other people. And so as part of this kind of movement, it seems like there is a social aspect to it. How important is that social aspect, Opal?
It's very important. During COVID and things like that, some friends of mine, we actually Zoomed and made things together on Zoom. And that was great, because then we weren't, you know, all alone in our house or just all alone with our families and that's it. So, but yeah, it's very important to gather and create things and teach things. When I usually do a show, sometimes I'll bring my needle felting with me because it's something I can carry around, and people just, they have no idea what it is, but then they see it and they're intrigued by it. So maybe they will go out and figure out how to needle felt. So I love teaching and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So you said needle felting, and I'm not familiar with that kind of work, except that I've seen the end product of it. So just for somebody who's uninitiated, what is needle felting? What goes into the process of needle felting?
So with needle felting, you start out with raw wool, which is wool from a, you know, sheep, and then they clean it, and then maybe they'll dye it, and then they do something called card it, which, and then you have a needle, and there's some barbs on the needle, and you just continue to poke around at the wool, and it kind of compacts it, and you can really work with it and create shapes and pretty much anything you'd like. And then I also have a needle felting sewing machine, which has 12 needles, so I can make 2D stuff really fast. Like, you just put raw wool on a, you know, piece of wool felt or something like that, and just, you know, go around with a sewing machine. So it's a pretty new craft. It started out in the 80s, in the 1980s.
Interesting. That sounds interesting. I want to hear a little bit of what everybody does. But first, let me remind people you're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's Opal Tolpo, who we just heard from. Phil Waletzko is with us as well, and Barb Koyman. Barb, let me talk to you, because you described in our conversation leading up to this recording, you described your artistic output as eclectic, and then told me about several of the different things that you're involved in. So talk about a couple of the things that you enjoy the most, and what goes into your art that way.
I have to say some of my eclecticism comes from wanting to do things that I can do kind of quickly without thinking about it a lot at night because I'm busy with other parts of my life. But I really enjoy being part of these shows and being part of the organizational aspect of it and helping bring together these different artisans for our Driftless Makers Exchange shows. Over the years, we've been doing this for 6 years now, and we've done about 10 or 11 shows total in that amount of time. And Phil has been involved in most of them, and actually Opal as one of the organizers as well. So for me, it's not, I would love to have time to do more in-depth kind of crafts, but I started many years ago making these origami lights. They're string lights where it's an origami fold that I just take a 6x6 inch piece of paper and I fold it in this particular way. And in the end, there's a hole in it and you blow it up and it pops out into this little three-dimensional box. And then there's with that hole that you just blew up, I can put it on a single light of a string of lights, and you turn the lights on, and whatever color comes through the paper makes these little lanterns, and they're really charming, and they're easy to pull together, and I box them up, and then I sell them that way, and I have some customers who've bought several sets of them because they love to gift them to people. They make a really nice, like, little nightlight in a baby's room, or a gift for a teenager or somebody in their dorm room. Or I have a string that's across my fireplace mantle, you know, a set that I like. So I've played around with designs and colors and that, and they can, and I've over time learned to actually be able to make custom items of those. I played around with, like I was telling you prior, small items. I do these magnets where I love to play with words, and mm-hmm. I kind of like to swear. So I have these magnets that I call my naughty and nice magnets. And so they have little sayings on them. Some of them are naughty with some swear words, sort of expressions. And then some of them are, you know, still kind of exclamations or expressions, but without the swear words. So those are my nice ones. And people just go nuts for these, like, little magnets. So I come up with the words, I decorate them, I glue them onto a little glass bauble, and then put a really strong magnet on the back of them. And people will buy 5 or 10 at a time, and they give them as gifts, and they think that they're funny, and, is, oh my God, I use that swear word all the time, or I have to give this to my best friend. And so there is that. And then also, because I'm interested in history, I'm a historian, I started to kind of delve into historic photos, historic images. How could I use those? How could I apply those into what I'm doing? So I would print them on my printer in a small format so I could cut them out and put them on matchboxes. I have printed them and put them on upcycled tins. You know, you have an old soup can or something like that, spray paint it, and then affix this historic image. And it might be some weird, you know, photograph. It might be an old postcard, things like that. So people are very intrigued with them. I especially have focused on historic imagery from the La Crosse or Wisconsin, Minnesota region and that, and those have been quite popular. So I'm trying to connect with people kind of on that historic level with some of the imagery and then presenting it to them in a way that they can keep or gift to somebody. So I work with little things mostly right now.
Quite an interesting variety of things, and just a small sampling really of the various artworks and practical items that are available that our Driftless Makers make, and we'll tell you how you can find out more about where they're going to be this weekend later on our program. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you would like to get in touch with the show and let us know what you think, or give us an idea for something you'd like to hear in the future, you can contact us by emailing newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. Of course, if you'd like to stream an episode of our show that you might have heard before, or if part of this conversation that you might have missed, they're all on our website. That's wpr.org/newsmakers. Our program continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse. Thank you for joining us today. We're talking about the Driftless Makers Exchange, and they're going to be at the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival, or many of them will be anyway, which is going on Saturday downtown in La Crosse at the Civic Center, in the brand new part of the Civic Center, so you can get to see that brand new space overlooking the river there downtown if you go check out the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival. Joining us on today's program, Barb Koyman, Phil Waletzko, and Opal Tulpo, who are all makers in their own right. We've heard a bit from Barb and Opal, and I want to talk to Phil about your work. Phil, you make spoons, and you talked about gathering a little bit with some other people to do woodworking collectively, to learn from each other, swap stories with each other, that kind of thing. But tell me about your early days. How did you first get involved in your craft?
When I was really young, I can't remember if I was 14 or 15, I had a neighbor who was a wood carver, and he carved wooden shoes, like little itty bitty wooden shoes. And he would sell them at the community garage sales every year. And I started doing I would just go and hang out with him and carve a little bit, just knickknacks. And then, you know, I got older, hit high school. I got real focused on earning my eagle with the scouts, and I kind of moved forward. And it wasn't until I had my first daughter that I was sitting at home, because I was going to be doing the stay-at-home dad thing, and I'm like, I need to find something to do on the side so I can keep my wits about me and I don't go crazy while I'm sitting at home taking care of my daughter. So I just hit the internet real quick, and I've seen other guys doing it for a couple of years, doing spoon carving or making other tureen, hand-carved bowls, or just real traditional handcrafts for wood. So I thought, I'll give this a go. So it was at the fall of 2014, I got my first hook knife. I picked up a couple Sloyd knives, and I started carving clubs. And then, you know, that progressed until about 2017. I kind of hit a point where I actually made something and went like, hey, I could give this away to someone and feel okay about it, or I could try to sell it. And that was the point where I had contacted the Driftless, and I asked probably more than a few questions because I had no idea what I was doing. And I did my first show that winter with them, and I had a blast sitting there going like, hey, this is cool. People like my stuff. So that was how I got started.
These crafts often involve needles or knives or cutting or, you know, putting back together or using different things. How do you approach Opal? Maybe talk about how you approach. You talked about having taught other people. How do you approach people who are a little bit hesitant that they might use something incorrectly and you know, cause some kind of injury or accidentally cut themselves or something like that?
Yes. As a needle felter, I have poked myself many a times, over and over and over again, and you just kind of keep moving on from that. But one thing about needle felting that I've heard and I've talked to kids about when I am doing the shows is a lot of them do it. A lot of them needle felt. I don't know. It's like an easier craft for them to do. And I always ask them, do you poke yourself? And they, you know, kind of smile and nod their head. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, it kind of hurts, doesn't it? And yeah. But, you know, they always end up saying they love doing it and they, you know, love making something. So I think if I remember taking a wood carving class once, and I cut myself like 8 times, and I was like, nope, this is not for me. So I just didn't go that way. But yeah, I mean, you know, there are, you know, you could get a little injured doing some of the things, but it's really not that bad.
Now, you talked about, I know you do things other than needle felting, but since we've talked about that a little bit, I'll just ask about needle felting. You talked about having a sewing machine that has special different things that you can really do quite a lot with. But on a very basic level, what kind of tools are needed for somebody to start needle felting?
It's quite simple. You have a big foam pad. I mean, it doesn't have to be big or anything like that. And you can get that at any kind of craft store, art store, yarn store. There's three different size needles. And so when you just do hand needle felting, it's just one needle. So, and then the roving, which they will sell at the stores and stuff like that. And that's pretty much about it. It's not terribly expensive to start doing it. You just have to know where to look to get your wool and things like that.
The implements are available at most stores, or I guess if there's something they don't have, they probably could order it for you. But how would somebody begin learning? I mean, is it too simple to say look on Google and see what you find?
Nope. That's a great way to go on there and look to see, you know, how to start learning.
What about you, Phil? Talking about wood carving and those kinds of things. What specialty tools? I mean, we all have seen scenes in the movies and TV shows of guys with pocket knives carving at sticks, but I would imagine the tools are more specialized than that.
You know, usually you're picking up some type of wood carving knife, a Sloyd. Usually it's a Scandi ground knife. It's got quite the acute edge, so you can carve. Then you're getting either a hook knife or a gouge, you know, for making a bowl or whatever else you're trying to carve. You know, I chop all my spoons out with an axe. So at this point, you know, I'm using a fairly good axe, but you're just picking up an axe that the weight is comfortable for you to swing. And then another big thing is before you like delve into spoon carving or wood carving, other stuff, sometimes you just need to hit, you know, like Facebook and check your community out. And there's usually a small group of people wood carving, and you can always contact them. Our group, you know, you send a message ahead of time, and there's a gentleman who makes sure that he brings his knives, he brings some tools. We try to make sure we have fresh wood there. So, you know, you can show up and you might not finish your project, but you can get a good start. And get yourself an idea if this is something I like, is this something I'm going to hate? You know, am I going to come back next month? And if you really like it, you know, is it something where you're going to look for a folk school like the Driftless Folk School and, you know, invest the money into actually taking a 2 or 3 day class and really delve into the art of what you're trying to do? Or if you want to make baskets, if you're wanting to do coopering, whatever they offer, you know, there's always, a budget way to get there before you really start to invest in the larger type of class, the weekend event. So,
and I think that's really something that people worry about. I mean, they look at someone who is, has some aptitude at a particular skill and they think, well, that must be, expensive. I'd like to try it, but how much of an investment am I willing to make, on the front end? So it's good to know that there are, sort of, as you said, Phil, budget end of those activities before you get into the higher end tools. Barb, I want to ask about the event that's coming up, the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival and the Driftless Makers Exchange being part of that activity. How did you get involved with the Roots Festival?
They actually approached us. As I said earlier in the show, we have been around since early 2017. Most of the shows that we did in those early years were at the Pearl Street Brewery. And so people who came to those events at the Pearl Street Brewery, it was free to get in. You buy your beer, you walk around your shop. And a lot of people really liked that kind of format, especially in the winter, to do, you know, a little craft shopping with a beer in your hand and music going on in the background. And so we already were kind of doing what the La Crosse Winter Roots Fest is doing on a much bigger scale. So people who are organizing the overall event knew about us from those earlier things that we did. We also have participated in a couple of the Great River Folk Fest events where we were the craft vendors there. So again, music, beer, crafters, they all go together really well. So it just was a sort of an easy segue. And so they came to us. We know about you. We've seen what you do. We know you have this database or this list of potential vendors out there who you've worked with in the past. Would you be interested in being part of this bigger event? And we talked about it. And we're like, this fits in exactly with what we have been doing. We're trying to give a venue to these local craftspeople, artisans, in a way that we can showcase them, but also get people to come out and actually purchase from them. And we were really excited about being in the new La Crosse Center, you know, area, wing, the ballroom and all of that, because we feel like that people will come out of curiosity just to see that new space, because this was the first, from what I understand, the first public event that will be in that space. There have been other private things there prior. So this is, so there's a lot going on that we feel like we're a good fit with it. The part where we will be in the wide hallway. You come up the stairs, up the escalator in that new section, and we will be right there at the top of the stairs in that wide hallway. And then further down the hallway, that's where the ticketed area to get in for the music and some of the beverages and food in that. But our part where we will be set up will be free and open to the public, all ages. So that's exciting too. And that's because of sponsors that the La Crosse Roots Fest have been able to get from the community that allows us to be able to have our part open to just anybody. You don't want to go to the music part, come and see us though. We'll be there.
And that's on Saturday at the La Crosse Center. And it starts, what time does it start? 2 o'clock?
2 o'clock. And we will be set up until 7. The music part will go on a little bit later into the evening, but we'll be there from 2 to 7.
And later in Newsmakers, you're going to hear all these details, but I'll tell you right now anyway. As Barb said, the craft portion of the arts and crafts portion of the event is free, and you'll be able to find some food, find a certain amount of music, and lots of arts and crafts to look at there. And then the ticketed portion of the music activity starts at 4 o'clock, and it's $20 in advance, $25 at the door. And it in part goes to support the Hunger Task Force of La Crosse. So that's a good tie-in right there. But speaking of all these, you know, we talk about tickets and purchases and, you know, those kinds of things. I want to talk about the economy of this, because you're all makers, you make things with your hands and then you sell them. And then, you know, you have to balance like how much effort you put in with something to along with like how much is somebody really willing to pay for it, given what they've come to expect from big box stores and that sort of thing. So I'm wondering, economically and like dealing with people that are used to that kind of economy, what's it like? We'll start with Phil. What's it like to be a maker in kind of a big box store world?
It's a little difficult. You know, there are people who come up, they walk up to your table, they know the effort, they know the time, and they understand the price. But then there are also people who show up, they pick up your item, they have some choice words, they set it down, they'll have a few nasty comments, and they walk away from your table. So, you know, it's kind of a business where you have to have a little bit of a thick skin and keep the comments to yourself and, you know, just let it be as it's going to, what's going to happen is going to happen, you know?
So
you
I know different products take a different amount of time. This might not even be a fair question, but just in very, very general terms, if you're making just a basic wooden spoon, like how many hours do you have invested in that at final product?
You know, it gets to be 2 to 3 hours. You know, there's dragging trees out of the woods. There's driving to your locations. There's trying to push your stuff online. Like there's quite an investment of time when you're making this stuff to actually try to sell it.
Yeah. So it's, really, it's completely unreasonable for somebody to expect you to sell that thing for like 99 cents or whatever. That's just not,
yes.
That's just not going to happen. And people need to understand for handmade items, that's not how it works. Some of Barb, you were talking about some of your things that seem less utilitarian and more artistic. Are the people that are interested in those kinds of products more understanding of the sort of non-box store price structure that they might find?
I think so. The cost of my items tend to be, because they're small items, they don't take me long, I can do a lot. They don't cost a lot, so I sell a lot, but I don't make a ton of money either. Like my origami lights, I do a string of 20 lights. I sell them in a nice box for $20. The way I justify it, and I'll say this to people, it's like, this is something that I created. This is handmade. And what, are you going to go to Target and buy a string of lights? You would spend that same 20 on a plastic flamingo string of lights or something that's made in China. So I think one of the things that we all as makers end up doing is we talk to our customers. We tell a story. We talk about, maybe Phil talks about how he drags the wood or chooses certain woods or how, if somebody is curious, nothing can ask. And so when he sells that spoon or somebody sells that handmade bag they made, or that necklace, they're able to talk about where they sourced the parts, how they came up with the idea. And that story is part of what will hopefully encourage people to spend what these things are worth.
Opal, we've been talking about sort of the economic aspect of being a maker, but just from a totally like cultural point of view, how important is it for people to support locally made, handmade items, such as the three of you make?
It's very important because it keeps the craft alive. I mean, it's so many people stopped doing crafts, you know, long, long time ago, like certain kind of crafts. But then when you see things like that, you know, they come out and they see something and they ask about it and they're just like, what is that? You know? But yeah, culturally, I think is very important because I also make penny rugs and they are from the Victorian times. And I like talking to my customers about how long this craft has been around and the history of it and all that kind of stuff. So it is quite interesting. Like, you know, you can research any kind of craft and figure out where it comes from and what time period and everything like that. So culturally, I think it's great that people are still making things, and it's also important too.
Well, the Driftless Makers Exchange is the group that all of today's guests belong to, and they're going to be participating in the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival on Saturday, and we'll have more information on that later in the show. But I want to thank our guests today, Opal Tulpo. Thank you very much for being with us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
Barb Coyman, thank you for being with us, and thank you for helping me organize everybody participating today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And Phil Waletzko, thanks a lot for talking to us today. And I want to see you carve a spoon one day.
Yeah, if you show up at some of the events, indoor or outdoor, where they don't have a carpeted floor, I usually like to work. But
perfect.
Yes.
Thanks a lot, Phil. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. As I mentioned before, we're going to be learning about the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival in greater depth next. And I want to thank our guests from the Driftless Makers Exchange. If you'd like to hear part of our conversation that you might have missed, you can find it all on our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Newsmakers continues in just a moment on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Thanks a lot for joining us. You've heard in the show today all about the Driftless Makers Exchange and the interesting role that makers play in our society, and how that whole notion of being a maker has really become kind of a movement over the last few years. Well, and they're going to be participating this weekend in the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival. And joining us to talk about that event is Brent Hannafel from La Crosse Local. Brent, thank you very much for being here today.
Hey, I'm excited to talk with you.
Also with us is Andy Tempty, who is with The Remainders and is their singer and a fine musician, and also heavily involved in the festival and the musical entertainment that's going to be involved there. Andy, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's just talk about the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival. Brent, what is it, and when did you start working on it?
A group of us from La Crosse Center and La Crosse Local and Dees Productions, which is Greg Hall, were talking about it about a year before COVID happened and thinking about a music and art festival that could happen in the dead of winter, you know, to kind of allow people to get out, you know, and kind of have some fun and kind of get out of the house while supporting local artists and musicians.
So you started planning right before COVID. COVID hits, kind of puts all the plans on the shelf, and then the festival is coming on in full force this year. So what's going to be going on in terms of what activities people can participate in?
Before getting to that, I mean, I think one great thing that happened with this was our partnership with The Remainders and with the Hunger Task Force, because I think that's what really made this festival. You know, we're going to be trying to raise a lot of money for the Hunger Task Force. Andy and The Remainders came on and really kind of gave us a level up in terms of sound quality, in terms of having them perform. So it's been really exciting seeing it build to that. But people can watch about 6 bands play, 23 artists. They're going to have food from local restaurants. All the local breweries are involved. La Crosse Distilling Company is going to have a special VIP event. They actually made a beer for us as well.
Oh, wow.
So there's a number of activities to fill that whole day. You know, it's from 2 p.m. to 11 p.m. We have a free component, a paid ticket component. So, you know, there's an all ages piece with the art. And then we can kind of, you know, dance a little bit at night, adults 21 and up at the end. So
Andy, you're part of The Remainders, but also you're really heavily involved in putting together the musical side of what's going on at the Roots Festival. Tell me about the music.
We feel very fortunate to be included in this event. As Brent mentioned, you know, having that philanthropic component with a Hunger Task Force is very important to us as a group. Our motto is fun philanthropic midlife crisis. so we want to make sure that we're giving back to the community that's given so much to us in our lifetimes. You know, the music is going to be phenomenal. You know, you've got Dan Sobranek, who's been in the community for a very, very long time, providing his talents right off the bat. And then we at 4 o'clock, when the main room opens and the music there starts, we're going to punch everybody in the nose with Reed Grimm, you know, from American Idol fame. And he's just an amazing talent. Brent also mentioned, you know, Greg Hall and the Wrecking Ball. You know, Greg is a phenomenal force in the La Crosse community and beyond. And then right after that, you've got Tug, which is also, you know, just a wonderful contributor to the community. And then this band called The Remainders gets on stage and does a little bit. And then we got the Trippin' Billies out of Chicago, which is, you know, which is really, you know, Jay and Brent and that whole crew got the Trippin' Billies involved. So there's going to be something for everybody that day. And it's the first annual, and, you know, hopefully we can really keep this thing going.
Well, it sounds like you're going to be off to a good start, and you talked about the main music venue really starting at 4 o'clock and going on into the evening, and that's the portion that is ticketed, isn't that right, Brent? Do I have that right? And then the vendor portion of the day earlier in the day is a come as you are kind of thing.
Yeah, people can pick up tickets before the day of for only $20. So that's basically, you know, what is that, 9 hours of entertainment for $20, $25 the day of the show. But also, thanks to our sponsors, the Driftless Makers Exchange, where there'll also be food available. There'll also be a lot of the different beverages from the local breweries. We'll be open from 2 to 7 p.m. in the brand new Riverside Ballroom hallway, which then, you know, of course, leads to the nice ballroom that's overlooking the river, which is, if you haven't had a chance to be down there, it's going to be amazing. And I believe this is one of the first public events to happen in it. So it's a brand new facility, it's spacious, it's open. It's going to be a beautiful day for music, food, and art.
Andy, I can't have you on the show without talking about the band a little bit. You talked about it being sort of a how did it go? A kind of middle-aged philanthropic endeavor. It's yeah. a group of musicians from around here. You all do different things and have just. A wide array of activities that you're involved in, and yet you're all part of this band that has really achieved quite a sound and has become well known in the area. Tell me about how the band started.
Well, the band started back in 2003, and it was going to be one night only. It was for my older sister's 25th class reunion. A bunch of the remainders from the class of 1978 were going to get together and perform at the class reunion. I sang backing vocals for my sister that night, and after that night transpired, everybody was going to go their separate ways. But the guitar player at the time wanted to keep the thing going. My older sister was already in two other bands, or possibly three at the time. And I was at a point in my life where it was time to bring music back in. We have, ever since then, we've taken this approach of rocking out and doing good for the community. We've kind of built that reputation over time. And the musicianship and the camaraderie of the current group of quote unquote remainders. Our logo says R5, but there's actually six of us now. We brought in Greg Balfany a couple of years ago on the saxophone, and you know, you got Eddie Overholt on the bass and Steve Duff on the keyboards. Johnny Nielsen is just such a phenomenal guitar player, and Josh Shively on the drums. I don't have any brothers naturally. I'm the middle boy between two sisters, so figure that one out. but to have all of these brothers all joined together in the same mission is just a lot of fun. And we're just for some reason we're just able to put together a sound that has its roots in 1970s and early 1980s classic rock, but we also do some modern rock. We're writing original music now and are publishing that.
How's that been incorporating now original tunes and not just those classic covers?
So I'm having a lot of fun. We're working with my son, our son Nicholas Tempty. He's out of Milwaukee now, but he's a performer, he's a musician, he's a production engineer. He's got all these skills and talents that none of us have, because we've all had day jobs for the 17 years we've been together. And now I recently retired from my 22-year career at Kaplan. So I have a little more time as I'm pivoting to the what's next, and using that as an opportunity to write some original music. And we've already got one song out there in a music video. The next song that's coming out in a couple of weeks, I wrote that song in December of 1984 as a love song to my now wife, who is my new girlfriend at the time. So we're all about persistence and longevity.
1984, and it's finally seeing the light of day. That must feel pretty good.
Oh, it is awesome. It is just awesome. I'm like a little kid again.
Brant, you've mentioned a couple times, and so has Andy, the Hunger Task Force, which is one of the charitable beneficiary of the La Crosse Winter Roots Festival. Talk about that organization and why you found it to be important to support.
Well, really, I mean, it seemed like Winter Roots is kind of just kind of all lined up, because actually the real connection was from Andy again, from the Remainders, and his wife, Linda, kind of brought the Hunger Task Force on from past shows that they've done raising money. So they really kind of amped it up this year. You know, they're aiming to raise $10,000, collect over 5,000 pounds of food for people to come there. They're going to have auctions. I believe, Andy, there's a guitar, correct, too?
Yeah. So Dave Rogers from Dave's Guitar Shop fame, he and I worked together to get a really, really nice acoustic guitar for a raffle that's worth, retails for $1,500. So we've got some, the Hunger Task Force is coming, really, really loaded here with a lot of, the silent auction and the raffles. This is going to be just a wonderful evening, and you get music and you get to support a wonderful cause, and you get to come see some awesome art, and there's going to be food and beer in this wonderful new space. I'm glad the Omicron surge is now, we're on the backside of that curve, and everybody can feel more comfortable about coming out. And I think everything's coming together.
You brought up the Omicron surge, and so I want to make sure that everybody's aware of what they need to do to be able to attend. What kind of health precautions are you asking people to do or encouraging people to do, Brent?
So we're following the La Crosse Center guidelines. You can find that information at lacrossecenter.com. Masks are strongly recommended. There's currently no recommendations right now to wear them, but we are recommending that people wear them. You can also find out about their new system and how they keep the area down there safe. They're full pretty much every day now. And they actually want I think it's called a GBAC Star facility accreditation for cleanliness just recently. So they're in the business of putting on events, keeping people safe. I would just suggest head over to lacrosselocal.com. We have the COVID information on there, or head over to lacrossecenter.com, which they also have that info.
So there are a lot of places in the community that are kind of doing that encouraged but not required thing, and that's kind of where it falls.
La Crosse Center takes their, they basically ask La Crosse County for guidance, and they make their decision from there. So it's through the city of La Crosse.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get down to the particulars. I want to make sure that we get the information as far as ticket information, what part does or doesn't require a ticket, and what time people need to be where. Brent, you got the details in front of you, I hope.
Absolutely. So 2:00 kicks off the VIP hour. La Crosse Distilling Company's doing a little event, which are currently, unfortunately, sold out, or we're excited about it. But also at that time at 2 p.m., the public is invited to come to the Makers Driftless Exchange. And that'll be open until 7 p.m. They could peruse 21 plus artists, grab food, but also walk around with, get a glass of beer and check out the art. Again, followed at 3 p.m. when we start to hear music from Dan Sopranik, as we said, followed by Grimm, Greg Hall, Tug, the Remainders. Trippin' Billy's actually is a Dave Matthews tribute band, which we always think of as more of a summer thing, going to Alpine Valley. So it's kind of bringing a little summer to the winter here, which will close out the night about 11:00.
And the music portion is ticketed, and where can people find those tickets?
They can actually pick them up directly through Ticketmaster. If they want to get rid of some of the fees, they can actually just stop down at the La Crosse Center box office. Just walk in and they'll hook you up.
And 20 in advance, and how much the day of?
25. So,
and that's all really on affordable. That's all on Saturday, right?
That's all on Saturday, but also on Friday there's a pre-event of La Crosse Distilling Company.
Okay.
And this is another big component. We've always been giving back a little bit of the proceeds from ticket sales, this Friday at the La Crosse Distilling Company, if you buy a general admission ticket, $5 will go directly back to the Hunger Task Force. So from 6 to 8, you could stop down there. They'll have the distilling room open, actually the distilling area in the back. And so they're going to be trying the new Barbagazzi Black Lager beer, which they made for us. And the first 100 people that show up actually get a taste of that. So it should be a good event.
Okay. And all that information is on your website, which is?
LaCrosseLocal.com.
All right. Brent Hannifel from La Crosse Local, thank you very much for being on Newsmakers today.
Thank you.
Andrew Tempty from The Remainders and one of the key people involved in organizing the big event as well. Andy, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Ezra.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to find more of our programs, listen to a past episode or part of this conversation that you missed, you find them all on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. If you want to reach out to us, let us know how we're doing. Maybe that's a little dangerous. You can contact me via email. It's newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. There are a couple of opportunities to hear our show every week. You can listen to us on the Ideas Network 90.3 at 10 a.m. on Fridays. You can listen to us at 7 p.m. on Fridays on NPR News and Music 88.9. For producer Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.